I know we've only known each other for 4 weeks and 3 days, but to me, it seems like 9 weeks and 5 days. The first day seemed like a week, and the second day seemed like 5 days, and the third day seemed like a week again, and the fourth day seemed like 8 days. But the fifth day, you went to see your mother, and that seemed just like a day. But then you came back, and then later, on the sixth day in the evening when we saw each other, that started seeming like 2 days. So in the evening it seemed like 2 days spilling over into the next day, and that started seeming like 4 days. So at the end of the sixth day, on into the seventh day, it seemed like a total of 5 days. And the sixth day seemed like a week and a half. I have it written down, but I can show it to you tomorrow if you want to see it.
TBTL.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's Friday. Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend.
There are many ways to keep one's lips conditioned. I don't kiss, for example, 24 hours before a performance because kissing makes your lips mushy, and we cannot have mushy lips and be a champion.
Actually, you know what? I could email you. Or, you know, you could email me at splet2@splatnet.net. Splat1's my father. I mean, it'll be sad to see him go, but it'll be nice to get my hands on that handle, you know?
All right. Hello. Good morning and welcome, everyone, to a Friday edition of TBTL. The show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Ambition accompanied with ineptitude, a deadly combination.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
Are you sure?
That's what they said on Ask Jeeves.
Coming to you from the Nest Broadcast Center, perched high in the sky above Portland, Oregon, where we have another beautiful day scheduled in the weather department. Yesterday was great, too. It was, as I mentioned, things had cooled down a bit. I think it was in the mid-80s, which felt, when I was outside, you know, like a nice temperature. A nice temperature to try some physical activity. Maybe a physical activity I haven't tried since before the pandemic. And that is playing pickup basketball.
360 spins and slam dunk pointers.
Went over to Irvington Park here in Portland and got on the court and really showed them how it's not done. Just total liability to my team. Just absolutely the worst player on the team that I had joined. Everybody was nice to me about it, but I was just like, I apologized in advance. I looked around at these four strangers, and I said, I want to apologize for what is about to happen. And after the game, they said, apology not accepted, sir. No, everybody was cool. But anyway, it was an adventure getting back out there. I plan to haunt the courts and disappoint the teammates on various basketball spots around Portland in the coming weeks. Speaking of disappointing folks, guess what we're at? We're at episode 3438 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
We got some Skyjinx woo that we didn't get to yesterday.
Hello? Airplanes? Yeah, it's blimps. You win. Bye.
Including the question of if we should bring alcohol back to flights. It was taken off due to COVID concerns, and a number of the major airlines are delaying the reintroduction of alcohol.
They're trying to say I was drunk. I drank 8 beers yesterday. That was all I drank.
Because even though fewer people are flying than during like normal times, there's a huge uptick in incidents of belligerent behavior, and it can almost all be tracked to alcohol, involving people bringing their own booze onto the plane. Seems to be a problem. Once the airlines eliminated it, people started bringing their own situation. So we'll talk about that also. Like at one point, two-thirds of the planes, like the commercial jets. I was driving through the Mojave Desert, I don't know, a month ago when I was in California for a TV story. And I was near Victorville and I saw hundreds and hundreds of planes that were just like parked. And I thought, are those planes all just like not useful anymore? And I learned that no, they were part of this kind of storage plan for a lot of the commercial airlines in America. And they store them in the desert because it's better for the equipment. But they also have to be careful of snakes, literal snakes on a plane, because rattlesnakes are crawling up onto these Qantas jets. So we'll talk about that. Plus, do some music for your weekend. All with the help of this hombre. He's a handsome young stranger. He's baby stepping. He's doing the work. He may be best known for his depictions of the tall ships. And he is not psyched about the snake component of today's show.
Snakes freak me out. Frogs freak me out. Spiders, dogs, cats, birds, a lot of things.
Doesn't leave us a whole lot of room to talk, but we're going to try. He's Andrew Walsh. And he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. Why can't we just talk about nice things like bunnies and Spanish
teenagers?
Oh, so
bunnies don't freak you out.
Well, if they look at me, they do, obviously. Mm-hmm. But to see one
far away. If it's like a
funicular
situation, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it just if it's really, really far away, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows how long a football field is, but around that, whatever that would be. If science
you know
can it's ever
really long,
out,
Andrew. Huh. A basketball court at Irvington Park in Portland. Like, when you play pickup basketball, a lot of the full courts, so meaning like, you know, you've got a hoop at either end, there's a mid-court line, there are maybe three-point lines and whatever. A lot of times those courts aren't actually regulation length. They're like a lot shorter because it turns out when you get on a regulation length court, like what the Trailblazers were playing on last night and losing to the Nuggets.
Oh, are they out of it now?
Yeah, unfortunately. I literally fully embraced the Trailblazers 2 hours before they were eliminated for the
like
season.
That's such an Andrew move. Congratulations.
Well, because what's happened is here in Portland, everybody's just been so excited because they've been in this. They were in a playoff series with the Denver Nuggets. By the way, congrats to the Tenvers, the Tenverites. You guys must be very happy that the Denver's moving on. But it's been building. Like, there was a double overtime game the other day where, I mean, the Blazers have this guy, Dame Lillard, who is just, like, one of the most exciting and fun-to-watch basketball players you will ever see. Like, of any player I've ever seen. There's something about these big moments where, I mean, he had, like, 55 points the other night in a double overtime loss. But everybody was tweeting about it, and everybody in Portland's got their Blazers jerseys on. So they're just kind of general. I also live, like, I'm looking at the Moda Center. I'm like Sarah Palin. I can see the Moda Center, which is where they play, from my front porch. Yesterday, I knew that they were playing last night, and yesterday I went and I played my very, very, very sad pickup game on a full court in the blazing sun, and I was immediately, like, three times up and down the court, and I was just like sucking wind.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was coming back from that to my place, I was driving right past the Moda Center, and the game was starting in like 10 minutes, and it was just like a throng of people in Blazers jerseys, and they were all going to the game, and it was just like it just made me feel excited, and so I actually turned the game on while I was taking a shower and getting ready for things, and kind of got into it, and then of course they lost, and now they're out.
It's exciting to see. I've described this feeling on the show to you before. I think maybe the older you get, maybe the more you can associate with it or identify with it, because I maybe was just
hemorrhoids.
Yes, maybe old in an unfun way, beyond my time. But I like seeing big groups of people enjoying themselves from afar. Okay, I was spoofing about the bunny before, but I'm not spoofing now. Like, for real, like seeing a big crowd of people getting excited to go into a game or a concert or something gives me life. Thinking about being in that crowd does not give me life. Gives me anxiety in a lot of cases. In a lot of cases. I mean, listen, I still love going to games. You know me, like going to see, my beloved Mariners, who I could never say anything bad about, obviously, because they won last night.
Sure. You know, firmer Modesto nut Jane Fraley.
That's right. And firmer nut Walton. John Walton? What's that guy's name? I don't think it's John. Anyway.
That little scrappy second baseman.
Yeah, I don't think he had a great night last night, but I was really hoping he would so I could say firmer nut Walton. But anyway, that's just inside jokes that nobody needs to know about. today's question on the in the newsletter video is, do you ever cut? You always say you're going to cut stuff out of the show. Do you ever cut anything out of the show? I think the fact that you just heard me make that joke and I didn't cut it out answers your question for you. Anyway, I love seeing it. I kind of get like, I used to love driving up and down Sunset right before the Oscars. I only did it a couple of times, but that was like, wow, this is like, I'm not into the Oscars. I don't like the Oscars. I don't even watch it on TV, and that's about as far away as you can get. I have no interest in it, but God, I got a high from seeing people gathering and seeing the streets kind of transform in front of my eyes.
Yeah, any kind of, you know, any sort of group event like that around, you know, sports or things like that, when we're all kind of on the same page or, all, you know, all excited about the same thing, that is a feeling of camaraderie. And it's also, I will mention, something that's been pretty rare outside of, you know, protests that have gone on. And that's a whole different energy, because that's an attempt to try to move for social justice. Although I would imagine that for folks that were heavily involved in that stuff, there was a sense of camaraderie in that as well. But as somebody who wasn't out there very much in those situations myself, like just seeing a bunch of people on the streets of Portland, excited about the same thing, just kind of reminded me of how life used to be. They also allowed 10,000 people in the stadium, which turns out is just a fraction of what that place holds, because it was still empty on television. Which
really?
I thought 10,000 people, that'd fill that thing up.
Yeah, I don't have a sense for basketball stadiums. Is it maybe double that? It can't be that much.
Well, it depends, right? Because where the Sonics used to play, speaking of sports, angry sports tweets and taking things down, I put up a tweet about the Sonics and took it down the other day. There was just somebody, some NBA memories website or whatever, had tweeted out this moment from the Western Conference Finals when the Sonics were playing the Utah Jazz, and the recording was insanity. How hyped Key Arena was. The Sonics were making a run. This was, I think, in Game 7, and they were going to eventually win and move on to play the Chicago Bulls and lose to them because George Karl didn't shake Michael Jordan's hand in Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, just to tie it all back together.
Sure.
But anyway, that just the volume in this bus was astronomical. It was so crazy, the fan excitement. And I said something like, any league, I retweeted this clip, and I said, any league that lets a team leave a town with this kind of fan energy is bunk in my book, because I still harbor a lot of anger at the NBA.
Yeah, good.
But then I also thought, I don't know, let's not be sour. I also was at that point getting kind of reintegrated into NBA playoff watching. Like, I was starting to kind of follow some of the plot lines. And so I guess I don't think it's bunk, because I'm still watching it. And like, had the Blazers won, I would have been very hyped for Game 7 against Denver. So I just took it down because I was like, I don't know, I'm putting negativity into the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And
sure,
no one, it's not going to drive any kind of movement. Like, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, is not going to see it.
That would be funny if after all the protests, it's your tweet. Like, God, you know what? I hadn't thought of it that way. Like, I don't want to be bunk. I think we can be better
exactly.
than bunk.
So I was just having a moment, because I remember watching those games and just being so enthralled with that team and so just energized over the whole thing, that the fact that team doesn't exist in Seattle anymore, you know, just made me mad in a moment. But anyway, I don't know how many people were in Key Arena. I thought Key Arena might be like 10,000, 15,000. It probably varies. But here in Portland, turns out that the Moda Center holds many more people than 10,000, because it was still – and I'm sure that they could have sold the thing out if they would have allowed it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about that. It's not about lack of excitement around the Trailblazers here. It was just because of, I guess, baby steps on the whole COVID stuff.
Can I give you a number here? Now, this is, I don't know, I'm guessing that this is going to be the renovated Key Arena, which is going to be called Climate Pledge Arena, brought to you by Amazon Smile or whatever.
I just saw another one. 73.
Amazon truck.
If you say Amazon Smile, does it count?
Yes.
This is going to be one of those shows that's just for you and me, Andrew.
Yeah,
it's like the end
I'm
of the week.
That. I'm getting
We're
that.
Back from the thon. By the way, the van, the Delica, is on the truck, Andrew.
Oh, nice.
The Delica is on the truck. I have received photographic confirmation from the driver.
Oh, cool.
It's sitting right behind a Tesla. It's doing great.
Whoa. several things there. First of all, the other thing we were counting on the road were not just Amazon semis. The other road game was how many car carriers full of Teslas do we see? We did not know that the vehicle that we were driving when we were playing this road game would one day be on a truck with other Teslas. There's some irony there.
All coming back together.
So you're still in the loop on this. I actually 17,500
is the average.
That's Climate Pledge Arena. So the renovated. Oh, right. So my guess is that's significantly more than when it was Key Arena, but I don't know. I mean, maybe Key Arena topped out at 15 or something. Anyway, this is interesting. So you're still in the loop on the van situation, huh? Like, it's not just like you washed your hands of this, like Judas, and now it's up to the owners. Like, you're still a middleman here.
No, I've taken a great personal interest in the Delica getting home safely. So what happened was yesterday I started getting these calls on my phone from a Las Vegas area code. And I was like, oh, gosh, I'm getting spammed. And so I kept ignoring it. And the person who was actually trying to call me was smart enough to text me and go, hey, this is the guy picking up the van.
Smart. Okay, yeah.
So then he called again, and I answered. And he was a very jovial fellow who had essentially zero information around where to get the van, who had the keys. None of the information that I had been transmitting to various people had made it to the person driving the thing that was going to pick up the van. But I'm making that sound like a bigger deal than it was. I told him where it was. I told him where the keys were, explained the whole thing. And then what was weird was then I got a text later from a Seattle number that said, and so the journey begins. And I've sent you a picture of this now.
Yeah, I see that
and
picture.
It's the Delica on a long, maybe longer than our friend Ruben's tow operation, and then there is a Tesla in front of it. So,
and who's the Seattle number?
I don't know. That's what I'm confused by. I don't know. I mean, it's there. But the point is, I have been coordinating a lot of this stuff, but I feel good now. I feel good knowing that van is on a larger vehicle and is safely being towed back to the Portland area.
And
so,
the owner hopefully is looped in on this too. I would say that's more
important. I texted her immediately, and she said something slightly sheepish. Like, she was like, she said something like, I gave them all of my information, and of course, here's what she said. Ha, of course, I gave them my info, but they called you.
That's fine. I mean, I'm just glad. I know that this is like business and this isn't how business works, but in the back of my head, I just keep thinking, I don't want to be hollered at, and I kind of feel bad that they're going through all this. So,
well, no one has your phone number.
No, I'm just glad that she's not upset with us for not bringing her baby back home.
I'm probably going to be taking her and her partner out for a little dinner on me / on APM. I don't know what the rules on that are. to smooth everything over. But you're walking out of this totally clean. None of this is sticking to your permanent record.
Do you want me to come to that dinner with you, and then I can learn that I'm hosting the Ron and Don show the next day? Which is what happened the last time you and I had a business dinner together about seven, 8 years ago.
I'll see if there's a Daniel's broiler down here in Portland. Hey, speaking of getting hollered at, I didn't want to talk about this, and then I started talking about it with you before we started the show, and now I do think it's a slightly interesting topic, maybe. There's been a little back and forth on Twitter about a tweet that I tweeted about the TV show Mayor of Easttown. And I know you haven't seen the show, Andrew, and I don't want to spoil anything for folks that aren't all the way through the show. So I get – although this is – not really a spoiler, it's just me kind of trying to analyze if I think a character worked or not as a sort of plot device. But if you are like very, very into Mayor of Easttown and you don't want anything spoiled, you might want to skip ahead 4 hours. I don't know how long this is going to take, honestly. There is a character played by Guy Pearce who I don't know how much I need to explain the plot of Mayor of Easttown to folks, but in case you haven't seen the show, Kate Winslet is a detective in this kind of I think made up town in Delaware County, which is kind of the, sort of exurbs of Philadelphia, kind of rural, but, small towns, maybe 50,000 people or something. And part of the show's arc is that this author, Guy Pearce, is in town doing some kind of like guest teaching at a local university. And his character's deal is that he wrote a very, very popular book, but it was kind of a long time ago. But he's still kind of sort of a literary celebrity, but one that is maybe fading a little bit. But he meets Kate Winslet's character at a bar. He's very interested in her. They end up hooking up that night, but then she's kind of keeping him at arm's length. But he seems very interested in her. He's pursuing her. He's coming over to her house. He's like wants to meet her mom. He invites her to a book event he's having, which ends up being very lavish, and he's surrounded by like female admirers who are – I don't know what the content of his book is, but obviously like they're very – these women in this scene are very excited to be talking to this kind of famous author, which also I will just say plot-wise is a little confusing because he's trying to say that he's kind of a faded star, a faded literary star, but then this event that he has is like very posh and catered and like tons of people are there and it's valeted and all these basically hot chicks are fawning over him, which to me belies the idea that he's a faded literary star.
Mm.
Like it's – but anyway, point is they start kind of dating, but then she sort of goes on another date with her like co-detective and – that ends the way it ends if you've seen the show. But at the very end, I kept waiting for something meaningful, what I thought of as meaningful, to happen between these two people, these two characters. And then at the end, literally like the last episode where everyone's just kind of getting their like 5 minutes, it's almost like in a, you know, when you have a band and it's like a jazz band and everyone gets their like chance to go off on their solo. Like the bass player does mm-hmm. their thing and then the drummer does their thing and then everyone applauds politely after each performer has had their moment. This was like that of television. They like check in with every character and every character does their little thing and then says, I think it's going to be okay or whatever. So Guy Pearce's character just like rolls up behind her house and is like, okay, I'm leaving for Colby College where I'll be a professor. And she's like, where's Colby College? He's like, I'll call you when I get there. And then she says like, what's going to happen to us? And he goes, I don't know. And then he literally gets in a Jaguar. Now, mind you, everybody else in this show is driving like a beat-to-shit Ford F-150. And Guy Pearce gets in his Jaguar and drives away to his, you know, tenured professorship at Colby College.
Okay. And he won't tell her where Colby College is?
Suspicious much?
Yeah.
Season two? Mayor of Colby College? Okay,
season
you know what? I take
two,
it all back.
She Googles Colby College.
You Googled my dirter. Anyway, I want to keep trying to make murder dirter jokes, but I'm already out of it. Even Googled my dirter was a stretch. So that whole thing kind of was a little confusing to me because I kept waiting to see if Guy Pearce was like a bad guy, like he had done something, or just was something more than just a kind of a random person who just seemed from a totally different world. Like I didn't understand why those characters. Why they made him that? Why they wrote that character the way they wrote it? Okay, so in a fit of pique, I wrote on Twitter the other day: did Guy Pearce lose money trying to short GameStop or something? Why was he/that character in Mayor of Easttown? That made zero sense. That was a tweet that I put out, and then I got a response from someone named Abby who said, "You totally misunderstood the show, Luke. It's killing me." Marge Simpson sound. His character is there to show that Mayor is capable of being in a relationship again. It even surprises her. He adds a lot to the story. It's a shame they didn't do more with him. And then I responded, it still feels random to me. It's like, let's have Michael Chabon randomly move to a shite town and fall in love with local police detective. Then somebody replied to that. Abby replied, kind of agreeing with me, saying, basically saying, yeah, that was kind of slightly weird how they did that. Then somebody else jumped in later and said, my take is somebody who goes by the name Public Emily. My take is it's a simple gender swap.
Sorry, right, that's a good handle, though.
My take is that it's a simple gender swap. We aren't used to male characters existing only to further the emotional development of women. But it happens the other way around in virtually every property, even to famous actresses. Paltrow, I believe that's Gwyneth Paltrow, in Iron Man,
yeah, I was gonna say,
for instance.
Yeah.
Zabe's relationship, I didn't even know that Guy Pearce's name was Zabe's. I'm continuing reading another tweet from Public Emily. Zabe's relationship to Mayor also feels like a typical lady role. Plucky, younger upstart who has, oh, Zabe's must be the detective who has a crush on Mayor, who they go on one date together. This is like her partner, who she's very... Basically, this show should have been called Mayor's Jury Is Still Out on Things, because everyone she meets, she's like not into them, and then eventually she's into them. Like that's what happens with her partner, who she's sort of paired with. She doesn't really want him there. She wants to do the case herself. but then they, you know, end up appreciating each other. Zabe's relationship with Mare also feels like a typical lady role. Plucky younger upstart who has a crush on grizzled, damaged detective. He's cute. He's generic. He has a little in the way. He has little in the way of an inner life. He's a woman in literally any movie. And then Kelly, listener Kelly, says, this is such a good point. No shade to Luke, but will we even be having this discussion if Mare were a man? There seem to be a few people on Twitter who think that maybe this is just a gender thing, and I don't really feel called in on this because everyone's being very nice to me. Like, I don't feel like anyone's trying to, you know, like, roast me or dunk on me too hard. But I've been kind of wrestling with this the whole morning, thinking, am I kind of not buying this plot because of the gender roles, or am I not buying the plot because it just seems a little bit undercooked to me? And I think, I don't know if it's just me being defensive, I kind of think it's, for me, not so much about gender. Like, for instance, if everybody were a different gender in this show, it would still, maybe I wouldn't have, maybe here's the thing, though. Maybe it wouldn't have jumped out at me as being kind of as pointless as it was if the gender roles were reversed. I've also never seen Iron Man, so I don't have a context for that Gwyneth Paltrow character.
Oh, yeah, and I don't know enough about Iron Man either. I was just excited when you mentioned Paltrow. I thought, I'll bet she's going to say Iron Man. I don't even really know why in the context, or if I understand or agree with Public Enemy there. I was just – I want you to know that
– Public
that,
Emily.
Emily. What did I say? I messed up the whole joke. I'll cut it out.
if you're hearing this reader, he did not cut it out.
Anyway, I don't even fully understand that, just for the record. I only gasped because I recognized a name, I think.
There's so much – I mean, I kind of – to me, it was – again, maybe it only stuck out to me because the Guy Pearce's character was there purely to serve the plot of, or the character's arc of Mayor of Easttown. It's very possible that I wouldn't have noticed it if the roles were reversed. Although I do think, I kind of can't help but shake the feeling that if it were, and I don't know who a perfect analog would be in the world of writing. But let's just go with, Sloane Crosley. Okay, so the writer Sloane Crosley, who wrote the great book I Was Told There Would Be Cake, very funny essayist, has sometimes been compared to David Sedaris, which is probably its own gendered thing if you're comparing her to a male writer. But let's say Sloane Crosley comes to Easttown, and a very rumpled Russell Crowe. I was going to say Sipowicz from NYPD Blue, but I don't think that's fair to Kate Winslet, because Kate Winslet is no Dennis Franz. A lot of Dennis Franz on the show the last few weeks, by the way.
Has Franz popped up?
Yeah, I can't remember why, but we were talking about him the other day too. If a successful writer who was a woman came to Easttown and then fell hard for the male detective who was just kind of in a totally different socioeconomic world and kind of cultural world, and like, would it have jumped out at me? You know what? As I say this out loud, it would have been less shocking. So I think I actually have to side with Twitter on this.
Isn't it kind of exactly, though, what you and I got into our tiff about, which is now one of the longest-running jokes on TBTL, which was when you were trying to justify a relationship. It wasn't True Detective. What show was that?
We met at a police conference.
It was the movie. It was the Seven Billboards outside of – I know I'm getting that
wrong. Oh, Ebbing. Seven Billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri?
I think I got the – do I have the number of billboards wrong, though?
Three billboards outside.
Three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Three little billboards outside of Ebbing.
Okay, because I have several things to say, having not seen Mare. So just from an outside perspective, yeah. Like, I'm not going to weigh in heavily on this, but just like kind of the feelings and the thoughts on this stuff. But is there a parallel between what you saw in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, which was you have like literally this. Wasn't it Woody Harrelson playing a police detective? And you were just like, why this woman who just seems like she's from a completely different world and literally a different country because she has an accent is just like suddenly in his world? Is there a parallel there?
The problem with this part of the conversation is I have forgotten so much about that film that I just can't say anything with even by my standards, any amount of accuracy or authority, but maybe so. I mean, I guess what I'm saying here, and this is rare for me, is I think maybe the people that were tweeting at me saying the genders are why this jumped out at me are probably not wrong. I think we're probably used to. And by the way, I find it corny. Like, it's not like I think, oh, good, Russell Crowe. I don't know why I'm being mean to Russell Crowe. He seems like a nice enough fellow. And maybe there's lots of people who think Russell Crowe is like the sexiest guy on earth. But like, I don't know. It's the kind of thing where I guess we're used to seeing guys who look and behave a certain kind of way often become the object of affection of a woman who's maybe more conventionally attractive or outside of their culture. Like, it could be the, like, you know, the TV, the courthouse TV reporter who's, or in the case, let's go back to the NYPD Blue model. I believe he dated the, like, very conventionally attractive, like, DA or something. So it's like, she became, like, that was the whole plot of NYPD Blue, was Dennis Franz wooing the DA. And there was literally a scene where their first date, he's eating and he goes, and he's sweating and he goes, I sweat when I eat. And it didn't seem crazy. Like, no one was writing think pieces about why this very conventionally attractive DA is hooking up with Dennis Franz.
Mm-hmm,
so, right. I mean, maybe we're just used to it. And when the script gets flipped, it seems odd to me. I really just wanted them to make Guy Pearce a murderer or something. I just wanted his character to do something more than leave in his Jaguar at the end, I guess.
Right. And, I mean, it seems like we're having a couple of different conversations here, because it seems like the conversation has shifted to say this trope is a pretty bad trope and it has roots in, you know, sexism when the shoe is on the other foot. And isn't it interesting how it stands out more when the genders are reversed? That is actually a very interesting conversation, and maybe there's some truth to it, but I don't think that's the point of your original. Like, I feel like, and again, I don't know why would I even insert myself into this and make people angry at me too, but just to kind of toss it around a little bit.
I love that you're drawing the fire away from me. This is a hero. You're going to get, if you survive this, you're going to get a silver star.
Right. Well, let me put it this way. It's like the Palestinian-Israeli crisis, right?
Thank you for the donation.
I inserted that into the show for some reason, for no reason whatsoever. I drew some parallel to that the other day, like a couple of weeks ago, and I got literally the funniest text message from Chris Hayes I've ever gotten, him just totally busting my chops. He's like, yeah, anytime. Hey, real pro move there, dude. Anytime you can just reach out and grab that hot stove, do it. Don't let the opportunity pass you by. What I was going to say was, that is an interesting conversation to have, and I actually look for this stuff all the time. I'm reading this article, Luke, that is kind of hard to describe, but you know what I'm talking about. It was in The New Yorker recently. It's called The Strange Story of Dagobert, the DuckTales Bandit. It's kind of a long read, and I kind of read half of it, and then I kind of forgot, and I want to pick it up again. It's actually not written in the very kind of more... I don't know. It's not as craftily written, for lack of a better word, as I expect a lot of my New Yorker features to be. It's a little bit like, have you started reading this too, or did you read this?
I haven't yet. It's on my list for this weekend.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, the writing itself is a little stilted, I think, and a little far removed. I'm kind of surprised. But, you know, it's about this this person who was setting off bombs in Europe in order to extort money out of businesses, and then how he became kind of a folk hero, as sometimes these criminals do, because it became him versus the clumsy cops who are trying to get him, and he used all these gadgets and weird things that seem to be inspired by the Uncle Scrooge comics, which were apparently revered in Europe at the time as a sort of intellectual comic. I mean, there's a lot of dazzling details in here that sound amazing, but as I'm reading the story, I'm like, this isn't as good as the description. But sorry to the writer of this for being so frank about it, but here's the thing that I noticed in this article. You're wondering, how does this tie in? This writer, whose name is Jeff Maish, he's not a regular writer for The New Yorker. He was just commissioned for this piece, I guess, or they hired him as a freelancer for this piece. And he lists so many characters in this. He never mentions what they look like, except the one woman police officer.
Oh.
He mentions all of these police officers, And then he mentions one detective, and he doesn't go into tons of detail or make her sound, you know, like he doesn't objectify her necessarily in some sort of like sexualized way, but he just in her introduction, he says something about her glasses and her steely hair or something along the lines of that, you know, like silver hair or something. And it just stood out to me. I was just like, you have not described one person. Now, you gave one sentence of a description to this person. If you had described everybody else and mentioned, you know, this person's like coffee-stained mustache and this other person, you know what I mean? Like, but mm-hmm. why was it this one character that he had to describe her glasses and her hair, right? And that stood right. out to me. I'm just like, that's sexist. How did nobody in the editing process of
The New Yorker is a famously kind of chill operation.
Yeah,
very
right.
little fact-checking. The editorial process is just kind of like, I don't know, do you feel good about the piece? Throw it up there.
I'm just very confused about how this thing ended up getting in this writer's hands anyway. But anyway, that's pretty rude to this writer. But also, I think it's pretty rude the fact that I'm scrolling through it and talking at the same time. I can't find the sentence. It doesn't matter. So anyway, that is to say that I am not always blind to, although certainly in a lot of cases, I'm sure I'm blind to all kinds of casual sexism in the world. I find it really interesting to call that out or when somebody else calls it out and to talk about it and to talk about these things that stand out when roles are reversed. That's all interesting. Totally. I do wonder, though, if that's the – does that really address, and I'll put this as a question, the point of your tweet? Or should I say, once we point these things out, is it good writing to just reverse it and keep it going? Like, it
right.
would be one thing if it was – if this movie, The Mayor of Easttown, or if this TV show was doing it specifically...
It's not TV, it's HBO.
Max. If they
God,
were,
I wish I could make that sound effect with my mouth, and I can't.
Nope.
Wow, what was that? That's something that will live on marsupial gurgle, and I deserve it.
But you know what I'm saying. If this
yes.
was something that they were trying
yes.
to make a point about it, and this was the part of the show is calling out these things, maybe even very subtly, or if there was like, if we talked to the director and they said, yeah, we wanted to insert this because we wanted to open people's eyes to how ridiculous this character seems when gender roles are reversed or whatever, that would be interesting. I don't think that's what the show is doing. I do think it,
right.
I mean, from what you're saying, I have not seen it, and so honestly, I will admit that. Do not come at me and explain Mayor of Easttown. I haven't seen it. But given
Don't
everything you've said,
to him,
it sounds like you're just making a comment about what you think to be kind of some lazy writing or a lazy plot device, and people pointing out to you that, well, it happens you know, in the other way all the time. That's interesting, but it doesn't invalidate your point, I don't think.
Well, and I think you're right. I don't watch a lot of this kind of stuff. I don't, and you know what I mean? Like, as far as fictional crime shows, like, I watch a lot of documentary style crime shows and things like that. But like, it's fairly rare that I am watching along with something like Mayor of Easttown that a lot of other people are watching. That's kind of, I mean, even I even said this a couple days ago about how that sketch, the SNL sketch, Murder,
mm-hmm.
it sort of felt like the parody or the satire of it was kind of funnier and funnier to me as the show went on, because there were more and more scenes that were kind of very, in my mind, mockable. Like, the show started off really well because there was a lot of mystery, but then anytime they weren't actively pursuing the mystery, the plot arcs of the characters were very uninteresting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just my take on the show. Doesn't mean that's how anyone else should feel about it, but I think you're right. I think what it was it just felt like it was kind of slapdash and not particularly useful, and it would have been the Guy Pearce character, and it would have been slapdash and not particularly useful if it was Sloane Crosley and Russell Crowe. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just – but I'm just not used to watching – most of the time, I don't go see very many movies that are like this. I don't go see very – you know, I don't watch very many TV shows that are like this. And so – I'm just not – I guess I'm sensitive to what I consider to be a little bit of hokiness or a little bit of, like, not great plot development. And so I noted it, and I did note it involving a female protagonist and then a guy who was there to kind of serve her character's arc. But I think it would have been uninteresting to me if the genders were reversed, because it just seemed like it was kind of hokey writing.
Oh, you know what? I thought I had a big surprise for you here, Luke, because while you were talking, I heard Genevieve was passing by my door, so I yelled, Genevieve, uh-oh, come in here. This is the type of thing where Genevieve's opinion would be, this is exactly, because it's about pop culture and like kind of social perspective.
Would you
and
describe
everything.
Genevieve as having blonde hair and a steely demeanor, right, not unlike Claudia Brockman?
Genevieve is here right now, but she's mouthing. Is your mic on, Vives? Here you go.
Hey.
You're mouthing to me. You haven't finished it yet.
I haven't had a chance to watch the final episode. I know it's increasingly going to be hard for me to avoid spoilers, but I so far have avoided them.
I'm sorry.
Let me ask you. By the way, hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Thank you for jumping on the show, even if only for a moment. I think I can talk about this a little bit without spoiling anything. The conversation Andrew and I are having is about a tweet that I put out about Guy Pearce's character on Mare.
Uh huh.
And my kind of not fully understanding kind of what he was doing there in the show, and also him being from this other, struck me as from this literary world, and what was like, just the whole thing seemed weird to me, their characters being interested in each other or whatever. And some people were saying on Twitter that I was having that reaction because the gender roles were reversed from the traditional sort of thing. Now, I don't want to talk about the end of the show, because anything I say about the Guy Pearce character will tell you either he's involved or he's not involved or whatever. So I don't know if we can actually really talk very much about it. But what was your take so far, this far into the show? What's your take on the Guy Pearce Kate Winslet thing?
Right. Like, and it is interesting to imagine if the genders were reversed and you had kind of a, like, I don't know if what she does would be considered working class. She's a detective. But, you know, she's sort of more like sort of like slightly earthy.
Kind of towny.
She's a townie, and he's a well-educated outsider, what clearly white-collar. Would we find it surprising if a woman, you know, were in that role and then was attracted to kind of like the tough sheriff or detective guy? I think people are right that is a trope we're more familiar with. And so I do think it's reasonable that they would be attracted to each other. I actually find it a little weird that I found his whole thing weird. and he gave me like a little bit of a creep factor, which is why don't tell me anything.
That's why I'm trying to be vague.
Yeah. But it won't shock me to watch it and find out that there's some secret part of him. But yeah, like I get on, you know, on paper at least, I get their appeal to each other.
Okay, let me ask you an unrelated question that nobody can figure out. Where the hell is Colby College? This is related to a different conversation we were having before.
Colby, is that Maine, maybe?
I think that's in like Maine or something.
Feels
right?
Like the Northeast to me.
Yeah.
I got a mailer from Colby College when I was in it's in Maine. Good call, Vives. When I was taking the like PSAT, like the thing before the SAT, they just said, what kind of college do you want to go to? And I just checked liberal arts. I didn't even know what that meant.
Mm-hmm. But still, that's a good call.
You couldn't find conservative arts, so you're like, all right.
And so all I got were mailings from like Colby College and Davidson and like just a ton of schools that now, if I ever hear them, I just remember getting a glossy magazine from them that the PSAT had pointed them in my direction.
I had a full library of all of those colleges' brochures as well.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, Vives, maybe, you know, it would be kind of fun, actually, and not to obligate you to more unpaid podcast work. I mean, the amount of unpaid podcast labor that women in this country do.
Yeah.
For TBTL, actually.
Alone. Yeah. Is terrible. But it'd be, I maybe just like, we'll hang out on your roof and talk about it. But I'd love to get your take on Mare when you're all done with it.
Yeah.
We can speak freely.
I need to get on watching it. I don't know why I have put it off. It's kind of one of those things where by the time I sit down to watch something, usually in the evening, it's after sort of a long day and I want to be focused, and usually mm-hmm. the time I like to watch those kinds of things are like on a Sunday morning with a cup of coffee, and I just haven't had a chance to like sit down in a morning time environment and watch it. But I will make an effort to get it watched this weekend, and then we could talk about it whenever.
Okay, I like to sit down on a Monday morning with a Yingling and a Hoagie from Wawa, or a Rolling Rock. I mean,
yeah, Yingling's bad, right? Because the guy who runs Yingling is a real Trumpster.
Oh, that is the least surprise. I didn't know that, but I completely unshocked to hear that. The amount of Rolling Rock that is consumed in that show, just as like water.
I know,
as
right?
Water.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't matter what time of day or who is in the kitchen. There's a Rolling Rock coming out of the fridge.
Everyone's always offering someone a Rolling Rock. Everyone's always accepting the Rolling Rock. It'll be like you're at a Bris Rolling Rock, and like the Moyle takes the Rolling Rock one hand, the foreskin in the other hand. It's like, anyway. All right. Well,
all right,
Veeves,
thanks
again.
Thanks
nice
for not
to
spoiling
you.
It. Sorry, yeah, I didn't have
sorry.
More to add.
Actually,
oh, not at all. Not at all. Appreciate your
this.
Time. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick
Who
break.
Booked
and
her?
Then what's that?
Who booked her? No pre-interview? Like, come on.
Right. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about this airplane stuff, and we'll play some music for your weekend. My song, I believe, that I have for this week was – I had picked it a few weeks ago, and it got bumped by the Counting Crows.
Oh, that's right, when the brand new Counting Crows song came
yes.
out. We never listened to
it. And
then
I played
the
like
trip.
The worst yeah. Counting Crows song, and then I found a better one, but it was like coming down the line in mono. It was a whole situation. So I aim to do a better job with my music for your weekend this week. Anyway, stick around for that coming up on TBTL.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Our top story, a piece in the Washington Post by Hannah Sampson. Airline passengers are behaving worse than ever. One proposed solution, ban alcohol. In the article, Hannah writes about Southwest Airlines announcing that they're going to postpone the return of alcohol until an unspecified time. They had planned to resume sales this month on certain flights, but they're not going to do that now. This is due to an uptick industry-wide in incidents of in-flight disruptive passengers. American Airlines followed suit, telling flight attendants in a memo last weekend that it was suspending alcohol in the main cabin, even though they're still going to sell it or offer it in business and first class. The American memo talked about some deeply disturbing situations that have been occurring lately with passengers. Let me see. I have the number here. It's something like the Federal Aviation Administration said that it's received 2,500 reports of unruly behavior since the beginning of the year, including 1,900 reports of passengers disobeying federal face mask requirements. It would appear that the issue a lot of the time is that people have been drinking, often bringing their own alcohol on, which, as we hear on the pre-flight message, is not allowed.
How are they getting away with that, by the way? Because I've been – I won't lie. I've been tempted.
My guess would be you can bring airline bottles. They're smaller than like in a carry-on. We used to do this going to Vegas. The Mummy would bring – this was his only contribution, financially or otherwise, would bring a bunch of airline bottles of booze. Because individually they're all small enough to get through the TSA, and then you crack those open on the plane, and you've saved yourself some dough. This was – when I read this, I started to think to myself – I started to have a moment of really wondering, like, does it actually make sense – as a person who enjoys getting liquored up at 30,000 feet, does it actually make sense that alcohol is such a key component of flight for so many people? And I will also mention this. You know how I'm always like – suspicious of corporations making rules saying, well, this is the save the whales or this is because of COVID. This is one where I think these companies are probably – they're doing this at a financial loss. I would assume that alcohol sales are a big profit driver for airlines. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it just seems like that's another thing they can sell to you at a decent markup. So if they're eliminating it, they're doing this because they really feel like it's gotten out of control. Would you agree with that sort of theory?
Yeah, it's funny. I for some reason yesterday, right before the show, after you and I had already sound checked, I told you, oh, you know, I had read this article and it put me in the mood for – it was morning, so I was in, on a weekday. It was like maybe Wednesday when this first showed up in the show sheet.
You had your Wednesday Yingling.
Right, and I was like, oh, man, it's probably, you know, like 10 o'clock in the morning. You and I had not – I don't know. Maybe we hadn't dialed up yet, but I had just read this article. And it made me want a Bloody Mary so bad because I just reading about drinking on an airplane made me think about that good Bloody Mary mix that they have on specifically on Alaska Airlines. And we've talked on the show before about – why being up that high kind of does something to your taste buds that makes umami stand out more, which is why people will often be attracted to Bloody Marys up there if they're not usually drinking them down on the ground, et cetera. So anyway, I was actually got up for a second and considered making myself a Virgin Mary. I was not going to get in the habit of drinking in the mornings during the show. Don't worry. I don't think anybody's worried about that, but I just want it on the record. But anyway, Genevieve maybe asked me what I was doing or something. And I said, oh, well, I was just reading this article about how they might stop serving booze on flights. And she let out a wail that was like, I thought that she, what's the dungeon in
the pit of despair.
Yeah, she sounded like she was in the pit of despair. And she just yelled, this is why we can't have nice things, which I understand. Like, we're going to be headed to Hawaii around Christmas time again. And we're really looking forward to it. Haven't taken, obviously, kind of a real vacation in a long time, as most people haven't. And part of that will be looking forward to maybe being on the flight. It's a nonstop flight, getting on that flight and having a cocktail or two to kick off the vacation. That's a pleasure of life right there for those of us who go in for it. But on the other hand, like, yeah, we need to really think about employee protections, generally speaking. And if we're in a situation, I mean, either we need to start hiring and training flight attendants to – I mean, they're already – hired and trained to take care of unruly passengers, which they should not have to do. Like they shouldn't know
how to operate zip ties.
Exactly. And like, well, we're gonna like deputize them even further. Like, that should not be what their priority is. And if passengers are getting drunk and putting other passengers and the employees' health at risk or life at risk, certainly, then yeah, this is one of those pleasures that we clearly we haven't earned it anymore. And also, flight has just changed. I mean, it is. I mean, again, I'm not advocating for this change. What I'm advocating for is people to stop being assholes, but so that we can have nice things. But I mean, when you look at how air travel has changed, we're not getting all dressed up and putting on a tie and getting on airplanes anymore like it was a special occasion. Like,
they're not serving us a prime rib,
right? Exactly.
Like those pictures from the 50s.
Everybody's just shuffling on in their soft pants and slippers, and you know, and that's fine. People can do what they want. I'm not trying to judge, but I'm just saying that, like, maybe then as this becomes more and more like public transportation owned by private industry, I'd point out, but as it kind of takes more and more of that feel, maybe that booze is not something that we should be adding to the mix any more than we should be, you know, serving booze on the metro buses I take to get downtown.
I will tell you that I don't think I have been on a flight that has alcohol. In fact, I'm almost certain of it. So I've flown a fair number of times during the pandemic, like, you know, a couple times when I wasn't vaxxed, when I was, you know, trying to be real careful with double masks and all that. And then once I was vaxxed a few times. And the thing that's been interesting to me is that I have not felt like the experience of flying has been radically different for me, minus alcohol, even though 2 years ago I would have told you one of the greatest joys in life is sitting down, settling into your flight, getting that first little drink, feeling much like how I think that the Bloody Mary mix hits your tongue different at 30,000 feet. I think being mildly buzzed at 30,000 feet feels different, at least to me. And I would have said, oh, the whole reason to try to get upgraded to first class will be because you might get a free, you know, you get a free drink or whatever. It is – all these flights have been fine that I've been on. You know, maybe I've been distracted trying to not get COVID or whatever, but – It hasn't like made the experience way worse for me. And in fact, it's kind of nice to get to my destination and, you know, not worry about like, oh, have I had too many drinks to go like get in the rental car, or was I annoying my seatmate with this conversation because I was at that point two vodka sodas in or whatever. Like, as a person who loves drinking on airplanes, I can now say it's not that critical to the experience.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know, like, the flight that I was on just recently coming back from Phoenix to Seattle, short flight, 3 hours They did have booze on that flight. I didn't have any, but I heard somebody behind me ordered a scotch, and they didn't have scotch, but they gave him a whiskey or whatever. So that's how I know.
Oh wow,
yeah. So it sounds like at least in some
Southwest does not have it yet. That's why I had to fly home on because of the timing of things. Right, that's going to be a whole situation because I didn't book it through the proper channels.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I've got my weekend cut out for me. But
we flew. You and I, because you weren't drinking at the time, so I didn't want to sit there and have drinks in front of you while you were potentially white knuckling it. But like that flight to Australia, like that, was that 15? Was that a 13-hour flight or 15?
I feel terrible that you drink. No. I do. I feel a little bad though because. Because that's a long flight to not get to enjoy a Bloody Mary.
I don't – you know what? Flying – listen, I enjoy having a drink on an airplane. I've done it plenty. I don't celebrate it or even maybe fetishize it as much as you did maybe back in that day. And I knew that it was – if I was by myself, yeah, I would have had one. But I'm not saying that I'm like some sort of martyr here that I took, some huge bullet. It was totally fine. And again, I would expect – honestly, I'd expect you to do the same for me if the roles were reversed. And I think you would. I don't think that's a lot to ask of somebody in that situation. But having said that, that was a long flight. Like, what was it? Again, 13 hours or something? And you survived that. You know what I mean? So, we can do it. Clearly, we can do it.
Well, it's what I've noticed is it seems – well, I was going to say it seems like there's two kind of people, but there's actually three kinds of people. There is the person who doesn't want to drink on the airplane because the whole situation is already a bit stressful or whatever. They're just, not interested in being drunk. And at 30,000 feet and trying to navigate all of the indignities of air travel. Then there's the person who might in normal life not be much of a drinker, but who is having their second double at the airport bar at 7 a.m.
That's an interesting move, yeah.
Because it's this kind of socially acceptable way to binge drink. Like everyone's like, oh, you want a double for $5 more? And everyone's drinking at 7 a.m. Again, I'm not – the listeners know my complex history with alcohol. I'm not going to judge anybody over what they're doing, but it's interesting how you'll see otherwise people who generally probably wouldn't be drinking at 7 a.m. are tossing them back.
And it might have to do with nerves too, right? Not just because there's the cultural shift. I'm kind of like that too. Sometimes I sit next to a guy in the Phoenix airport and he was sucking back several screwdrivers, and it was maybe 11 in the morning, and I was like, that actually kind of seems nice, like you're maybe going somewhere on vacation, so again, like you're kind of breaking the rules. But also I think there are some people who maybe are anxious and they're taking the edge off, or at one point they told themselves they were anxious like years ago and it's just become maybe part of their flight ritual, just like, well, right, I'm an anxious flyer, so I get to the bar and I have a couple of doubles.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it is because of actual anxiety and how much of it is because it's just become the habit. And again, I'm not judging anyone at all. I mean, I've made 8 billion questionable decisions around alcohol this week. But then there's the third person who is probably more like you or me, Andrew, at least me at this point, which is you'll have a drink on the plane, but you're not going to go Gerard Depardieu on it and start urinating in the aisle.
I forgot about that.
And it's like, holy, the question is, what breaks in the brain of the people who are doing the bananas shit that we then hear about on the news? The person who's trying to open the thing, trying to open the emergency slide at 30,000 feet. The person who wants to fight the air marshal. The person who is just wearing a Burger King crown hat and yelling the N-word on a flight from Jamaica, which literally happened, Andrew, a white guy.
Recently?
Yes, he's become a meme. It's terrible. Don't even look it up.
I don't want to
give him any attention.
Sounds
upsetting. What is it? What goes on that for some people, they lose their damn minds when they have a few of those drinks? It's just the weirdest thing.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, it probably is also what kind of a – I mean – that could be people drinking in the sky, but also it's probably just amplified what their personalities are like when they're drinking. I don't think that you and I are maybe this doesn't speak well of us in our relationship to alcohol, but I don't think that you and I are the type of people whose personality changes greatly when we've had too many drinks or some drinks.
No, I think just amps. I think it probably slightly amplifies. That's a thing about you, Andrew, is that you are even more like thoughtful and self-deprecating, and all of the characteristics of your personality, they just come out more when you've had a few drinks. And then sometimes it's the next day and you're like, oh, I wonder if I was being too much or annoying. And I'm like, no, you were being Andrew, which is a lovely person to be around. You were just being more Andrew. I've had, you know, I've had my high points and my low points as far as the parts of the my personality it brings out. I don't know what the perfect solution is, but I definitely think these poor flight attendants should not be dealing with as much bullshit as they're dealing with.
Amen. Yeah, that's the number one thing for me, honestly. It's just they're already dealing with too much. We treat them like they're waiters, and they're trained so far beyond that for, you know, and like I know that we can kind of dismiss the emergency procedures that they have to go over every time. But like I do know from talking to them, like they take it very seriously and they have real training there. And we are in a tube 30,000 feet in the sky, you know, like there is something to be taken seriously there. We can't have people just like, you know, drinking their Jim Beam or Jack Daniels and, you know, tormenting these people.
You know who else doesn't need this bullshit? The people that are working at this kind of Mojave Desert area plane storage facility in Victorville, where they have all these Qantas jets, and they have to walk around these they're called engineers. They have to walk around with what they call a wheel whacker, which it turns out is just a repurposed broom handle. Although each wheel whacker,
it's like they didn't give it. Okay, so it's a repurposed broom handle, but they've given it like an engineering kind of, you know, scientific important name. No, they just called it a wheel whacker.
A wheel whacker complete with each aircraft's registration written on it.
Oh, okay.
So apparently,
sorry.
Every airplane has its own dedicated broom handle,
gotcha.
AKA wheel whacker, that somebody like a guy named Tim Haywood is in charge of taking and whacking the wheels of the airplane so that the rattlesnakes leave the wheels of the plane. He said, we've encountered rattlesnakes and also some scorpions, but the wheel whacker does its job and they scuttle off. That's Tim is a very, very chill individual.
Yeah, I take it. And are we making sure that these rattlesnakes are not getting on the plane, as I think you
alluded
to
Well, that's the thing.
Yesterday.
You figure... I mean, yeah, I don't. Who knows? I guess we'll find out when we get back up in the sky. This article, which was from CNN, was actually very interesting about what an undertaking it is to like put a plane in storage, because there are so many little engine, parts and things that where the airflow and fuel flow and things need to be like very, very, very controlled, and you can't have stuff drying out. You can't have like gaskets and gauges and things drying out or getting stuck. So you've got to cover over all these sensitive, like, you know, sensors and elements with like special paper that keeps them kind of like in an okay state. So then you got to take it all off, right? And you got to make sure everything works. They think that it's going to be 2 years before traffic returns to pre-pandemic levels. So I guess they have a little bit of time, but I was just shocked. I guess I shouldn't have been shocked, because these airplanes are complicated and I would like them to stay aloft when I'm in them. But like shutting an airplane down takes like 100 hours, like 100 person hours, and then bringing it out of storage takes another 100 person hours. So that's a lot of work to just make sure that thing is going to work again.
Yeah, somehow I don't find that surprising, because they just seem so, like, I don't know. I just think about how 5 years ago, how long it took my computer to start, you know? Like the last non-laptop computer I had probably took like, probably, like, honestly, I would hit the power button and then walk away for 3 to 5 minutes before I could log on. Like, that was not that long ago, maybe 10 years ago, right? Like, I would assume that. I mean, we have these giant computers that fly through the sky. Like, yeah, it seems like, and I'm glad to hear it. I'm always glad to hear it. It's like, oh, no, we just turn the key, we put it under the seat, and then we go on with our business. That's a plane I don't want to fly on.
I don't want to, like, make anybody who's a nervous flyer more nervous, and I don't want to get into speculating about air safety. But when I read this article, I was like, I really hope they dot all those I's and cross all those T's.
Right.
Because I don't think we've ever had something like this, where 2/3 of the commercial airplanes have been put into storage and then taken out.
Yeah.
And that's just a lot of planes for a lot of people to have to remember a lot of details on. And I just had this like kind of panic moment of thinking about like one stuck sensor that's got just like a piece of tape on it. You know what they do here in Portland that I haven't seen before? It must just be this one chain of car wash places, they tape your back windshield wiper down with like a piece of masking tape. I guess so when you go through the car wash, it doesn't like get too crazy or get knocked off. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't seen that. We do have a rear windshield wiper now, and I have taken it through car washes. No, I've never seen that. Like, why is that more vulnerable than the second one?
I don't know, but or maybe it's this one place here. But I went through the car wash, and then what? The thing that was kind of funny was where they put the tape. Nothing got clean. So
Sure.
Like, there was a big dust, like the car was immaculate, and then there was a big square of dust where the tape had been. And now that I know what that was, all over Portland, there are people driving around that have no idea that their back windshield wiper is taped down with some green masking tape.
And they're not untaping it for you.
No, I mean, you know, it's not a huge deal to untape it, but it's funny because like everyone's driving around with the equivalent of toilet paper on their shoe.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a huge deal, but if you go in, are these car washes where you stay in the car or you get out of the car?
That's what I did.
Yeah, especially if you stay in the car, then if they're taping something down, they have to untape it because then the expectation that you're going to get out and the other end of the like assembly line that they push you through and then like untape it before, like what's the plan here, people?
I had no idea it was there until one day I walked up to the car from the rear and was like, oh, and then I figured out what it was. But I guess a bad outcome also would be if you didn't know it was there and then there was a rainstorm and then you're trying to activate your rear windshield wiper and it's taped down.
I don't like this policy, Luke. I'm not going to lie. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right, let's do a little music for your weekend before we skedaddle. This has been a fun week. It's we had such a great time doing the thon, and again, thank you so much everyone who supported us and are giving us a chance to keep doing this for a year. It's also fun to kind of be back in our normal spots and do normal shows too. I've really enjoyed doing the show this week.
Yeah, me too. It's been a good one. I'm looking here, by the way.
Better have enjoyed it, otherwise.
No, I really did. I was really thinking that I was putting together the newsletter and kind of, I accumulate. I'm sorry, I'm distracted. I collect all the recaps for the week's shows and put them in the newsletter. And I was reflecting on that yesterday. The reason I was distracted there was because I assume it's my turn to play some music for your weekend. And I have this, playlist going. It says May 2021. Now it's like May and June. It's just stuff I've been listening to lately. Often if you or a listener plays something for a music for your weekend, if I like it, I'll drag it over to this playlist. It's just like my active playlist for the month or two. Mm-hmm. And there's a song in here called Party Time by True Love Always. And I remember liking this song, but I can't remember what it sounds like. And I also can't remember, is this a song that you or a listener played for me? I was distracted there because I was going back through old emails, and it looks like I have not played this on the show, and you have not played this on the show. So okay. I'm assuming this is a new song to us. I'm going to hit play on it. If it sounds like something that we've already played on the show in the past couple of weeks, stop me. But for now,
as long as it's not Counting Crows, I know I haven't played it.
No. Wish I hadn't done that. All right, so anyway, I know nothing about this song or why it ended up in my playlist, but I think I like it. It's called Party Time by True Love Always.
Okay.
Thank you. wasn't joking, 'cause I didn't know you at all. I wanna know, when will you be? Step by step, and we're checking out the sound.
I remember why this song is in the playlist, and it is related to TBTL, but it happened...
Skylab?
Exactly. You mentioned Skylab, and also, like, you and me wishing on the same bright star or something, and listener David of the band The Smittens sent this
David,
to me.
David, whose last name I can never say,
I'm blanking on it right now, but...
It's like Zacharias, but
yes,
it's not.
Yes. And he emailed this to me. He's probably listening right now, and he probably heard that whole introduction and thought, Bozo, I sent that to you. That's why. But yeah, that
he's
Skylab.
He's trying a new thing where he calls us Bozo.
It's working. And so he said, in fact, the Smittens have done a cover of this as well. But that was True Love Always. And I really like this song. This song is old.
Yeah.
It's from, like, I think the 90s or early 2000s. But I liked it.
And yeah. I love a good Skylab reference.
Yeah, sure.
Song. That might be the first one I've ever heard that actually references it. I'm getting distracted, Andrew, because the train is honking outside. And can I quickly tell you before we get to my song about a great accomplishment that I had yesterday that I was so freaking proud of? So you know how I've kind of complained that the way that Portland is set up, at least the part of Portland I live in with these trains, is that you can get stuck on the wrong side of a train for like about 30 minutes sometimes, depending on if it just stops and waits or whatever. Last night, I was coming down this little off-ramp to Water Street to get to my apartment, and normally I would go left and drive on this kind of little street under some other freeway overpasses and such, and then I would come around and I would hit these train tracks, and those are the train tracks where I have been stuck waiting many a time now. I'm exiting off of this little off-ramp from the freeway, Water Street, and I hear a train horn, Andrew, and instead of going left, because I can hear the train is on the left, I go right. And I go down a block, and I shoot across the train tracks. And as I get across the train tracks, the frickin' arms come down.
Wow.
I beat it by 5 seconds.
Indiana Jones over here.
I was so proud of myself that I heard that sound and that I made the right call. Like, 'cause it could have been coming from the right, and it would have been like I had to either go left or right to try to buy myself a couple blocks, if that makes any sense, to get in front of the train. And like, I guessed right, and I got in front of it. And then, you know what I did? I sat in my car and I watched the train for about 5 minutes from the other side of the tracks because I was so freaking chuffed. I know that's weird behavior.
But, you know, I mean, no, it's not weird behavior to watch a train, but if the whole thing was I need to beat the
train,
and then you beat the train.
It was something about the fact that I could just go to my apartment whenever I wanted.
Right.
I probably could have sat there and watched the entire thing go by just because I wasn't trapped. Psychologically, it was a totally different experience.
Right, right, right. And you said that that's a super long train, right? Is that the one? That...
It's really long, and then I think there's something to do with there must be something with other trains and the tracks, because sometimes what will happen is it'll go really, really slow, then it'll stop, then it'll back up, then it'll go forward again. And I think that the backing up is maybe because somewhere way down the line they need to make room for something else to merge onto some tracks. Like, I don't know how all this works, but that's what really gets you, is when it just stops or when it backs up. Then you're really in trouble. But I've been like on jogs over on the other side of the river and been trapped by a different train. Like, you know, like I'm out on the road and I'm coming back on the path, and it's like now there's just a train going, and I don't think it's the same one. It's like a very weird city, or at least I'm in the part of the city where there are multiple trains crisscrossing major arteries of both pedestrian and car traffic. And when you're on the wrong side of it, you're just on the – I listened to half an episode of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me one time, Andrew, sitting down by the Dairy Gold Factory waiting for a train on a Saturday morning. And I like remember thinking, hey, this is a pretty good episode. Maeve Higgins was on. They were talking about Christmas trees. I like literally got through half an episode of Wait.
But what if you had a job interview to get to? That's what I don't
know.
How do you plan for this?
I don't know. What if you – I mean, heaven forbid, I mean, the people that drive the ambulances must know. Well, first of all, they know definitely try to drive under Luke's window whenever possible. But they must have routes they follow because imagine that you needed to do some life-saving and you were trapped on the wrong side of that train. I mean, that could be really a bad scene. So, yeah, it's strange to me that that's how this place got laid out, but apparently it did.
Luke, we have to move on. We got to play this song, and then I got to start working on some newsletter stuff. But I got to tell you one thing. Maybe we can go into more detail on this on Monday, but I realize I've had a life change that I should tell you about. This is the type of thing that we talk about on this show. We get vulnerable, mm-hmm. and we put it all out there. And I want you to know that in the past several days, I have become the type of person who listens to the police scanner in my neighborhood.
What are you hearing?
I'm hearing some wacky shit, man.
I love it. Will you do this over the weekend and then give me a report of
what
you heard?
Yeah, I'll try to remember to do it. It's happened very naturally. The other day, we had a bunch of sirens screaming down the street, cop cars, ambulances. Veeves and I were outside playing cards. We're like, what was that? I'm like, ooh, let me download this you know, scanner app. When the first, I think it based on location, it said you want the northern Seattle district for cops and fire. And I'm like, yeah. And then yesterday I was out on the porch. We couldn't really figure out what was happening that night. But then mm-hmm. I was on the porch last night. Cop car goes screaming by. I dial that thing up. And there was all kinds of chatter last night, including one dispatcher saying something along the lines of, yes, when you arrive on the scene, the person who called may not be there. He was frustrated with our delay. Says he's going to bed. The call was because he was fighting about politics with his roommate. They had a difference of opinions. And it was like, by the way, 8:30 at night. And this mm-hmm. person, so it sounds like it actually for a second gave me a real appreciation of the bullshit these people have to put up with. Right. You know, like
you called 911 because you had a disagreement with your roommate, but now you're going to go to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, clearly the caller is belligerent, but they have to take the stuff seriously. So anyway, it's just kind of weird.
You know what's funny is I jumped on the old Portland scanner the other night before our trip.
What is happening to us?
Before our trip, because you know, where I live is a very it's a very active area. You know, there's just a lot going on here. I'm like right in the thick of all kinds of stuff in Portland in terms of, you know, just lots of different people coming together and doing lots of different things, some of it apparently illegal. I looked out my bedroom window one night, like I was in bed actually, and because I had heard sirens, like just tons of sirens, like that kind of level of sirens that's like, okay, this isn't three cars, this is like 20 cop cars. And they had parked, they had blocked off different parts of this bridge that goes over I-84, not the soon-to-be-built Earl Blumenauer cyclist and pedestrian bridge, but like just like kind of regular car bridge that's near it. There was cops on both sides of it. Then down the freeway, it looked like they were blocking another on-ramp. And I was like, is there somebody on the road? Is there like a O.J. Simpson slow-speed chase that they're about to – like. So I was like at least 20 cop cars all with their lights flashing in these different strategic positions at like 11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what is this? And so I got on the scanner and got absolutely zero clarity.
It's really hard to follow scanner.
It's so impossible.
Talk,
and everyone sounds incredibly I'm going to misuse this word. Everybody sounds incredibly nonplussed.
Yeah, or nonchalant.
Nonchalant is the bright word. Everyone's just like 11, I'm 12.
Yeah.
Clearing the scene.
Yep.
I'll run up to the fire truck.
Really 11 out. Like, it was just like complete. I couldn't. No one was saying anything I could understand. And then, like, I just got bored and fell asleep. And then I woke up later to pee and I looked down and the cars were gone. So apparently, whatever happened. And I looked in the Oregonian the next day. There was no, like, I guess it was a non-event.
Huh, nothing. I like the long pauses, too, where you forget you have the app on. Because I was watching the ball game, like, on my lap or on my whatever iPad thing. And then I had my phone kind of up to my ear. And then I kind of forgot about it. And I set the phone down. And then, like, I don't know, 5 minutes go by without any activity. And all of a sudden, it's like, bark, bark, and it just starts squawking at me. I'm like, ah.
Well, if the mood strikes you this weekend, I'll do it too. Depending on you know what I'm up to, but Maybe we can, and again, not in a, and Lord knows if there's anybody who won't do this, it's you, Andrew. Not in a nextdoor.com way, not in a, not in a, like, I don't know, getting weird on the people in the neighborhood thing, but just maybe we could have a little Monday debrief on if we heard anything cool on the scanner.
I mean, the fact that the dispatcher was actually talking about, roommates getting into an argument about politics, and that the caller was frustrated and is going to bed now because he's mad at us. I was like, that is way more detail than I ever thought I'd get off a scanner, and I was there for it.
Nice. All right. How about I suggest a song for a little music for your weekend here? I would like to suggest a song by the Australian band. They're called Good Morning. Do I know about them because my daughter texted me this song and said, cool summery vibes, Dad? Yes, that's why I know about them. And I am not embarrassed of that fact. The song is Keep It, and it's really good. So take a listen to this. This is the Australian band Good Morning. So there you go. A little bit of Good Morning. What do you think?
I like it. Very chill. I mean, I think it's super embarrassing that your daughter hipped you to this. I mean, what could be more embarrassing than that? But aside from
I consider all the child support I paid just an investment.
No, it's just so
in
funny.
Knowing about good music in my mid-40s.
You're so apologetic about that. I'm like, why are you apologetic about that?
I don't know, because all I'm doing is just essentially laundering the songs that that a 27-year-old cool person in Seattle sends me. But this is the upside of being a teen parent, is that one day when you're a middle-aged podcast host, you have a pipeline to the good tunes.
Oh, what a TED talk you have in you.
It will probably be like a Gresham, TEDx Gresham.
It took me a second.
I'm such a catty little bitch who lives for the drama, but like a lot of times people will pitch themselves to like Livewire, or someone will be pitching them, and it'll be, and they have a TEDx talk, and
out of
like,
Oxnard,
exactly, and like, hey, I don't have a TEDx talk out of anywhere, but it's like when you think, I mean, you know, of course, the phenomenon of the TED talk, and people like our friend Nora has like a TED talk with millions and billions of views and stuff, and I don't even think every TED talk is so great or whatever, but there is a certain prestige there, but then you know there. There are smaller TEDx events happening even as we speak in all kinds of small places. And again, I'm not saying that there isn't cool stuff that comes out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone's like trying to like hype themselves for like Livewire inclusion and they're just like TEDx, any city I say is going to hurt the feelings of the people that live in that city. So right. I'll withhold specifics. But that's going to be my
Say Strongsville, Ohio. I don't think we have any listeners in Strongsville.
I'm going to give my TEDx Strongsville, Ohio thing called The Upside of Teen Parenting. All right. Our listener suggestion comes from listener Ben. He says, I heard this off an Instagram story on a pretty shite day, and it was totes what I needed. I think this is going to be my sunny day song all summer long. It's by a band called Polo and Pan. And I believe the song is called Feel Good. And Ben says, have a glorious weekend.
All right.
So that's what we're going to go out with. I listened to this song yesterday when I was putting this little list together, and it is real good. I think you're going to enjoy it, Andrew.
Yeah, I'll probably choose it for music for my weekend next week.
Well, you don't have an Addy to send you songs, so you got to do what you got to do.
Exactly.
Okay? We're all just trying to get by here. All right, that's how we'll wrap things up this week. Thanks again, everybody, for being part of TBTL. Again, thanks for supporting us during the thon. Even as we speak, little elves are putting together your thank yous and sending them out to you. So, again, we are stoked that this is still our job. Have a great weekend. We'll be back here on Monday with more Imaginary Radio for you and an update on the police scanners. Until then, have a great weekend. Stay safe. Take care of yourselves. Go Mariners. Go eat a bagel. It's not the water. Please remember, no mountain too tall.
Good luck to all. People you love, worth every fight. Want to rejoice, beauty of life. Embrace the game, natural smile. Breathing in deep, glad in with style. Sometimes I just want to feel good, though I like to. Dang, I thought that was going to be perfect, because I thought for sure. Because Genevieve's really smart in that stuff.
Oh, it's still, no, it's still good.
Good. I mean, she's always
Yeah, anytime good. We can put Vives on the show,
but
I fully support that.
I'll say this quietly. I do think that once she sees the end of the show, I think that's kind of the whole thing, right? When it ends up being nothing. And then the other thing is, is the whole purpose of that just being a red herring? Because like right now,
well, that's what everybody was also saying on Twitter to me.
Yeah. You don't have to whisper. She can't hear you.
I love it.
Power out.